Let me just kind of remind you what we've been talking about. Last week for lectures 4 through 6, we were talking a lot about these fully connected feed-forward neural networks, how to design them, how to train them. We talked a lot about the different hyperparameters. That was a big word that we discussed. And then last lecture, we were kind of talking about how to use supervised learning specifically within many body physics. And we looked at a couple examples of problems that we can study with architectures such as these fully connected feed-forward neural networks. And today I want to talk about another type of neural network that's called a convolutional neural network. And so I've just kind of written here some key terms or words that we're going to talk about that are related to these CNNs. And the problems that we studied, that we talked about yesterday, the same kind of setup can be used with these neural networks as well. So yesterday's discussion was not really specific to what kind of architecture we're using, but so far we've been talking about these feed-forward neural networks. I also just, you might have all seen, but I posted the homework one. And just like one thing I wanted to mention is just if somebody can just, one of you that was having the issues with downloading data and tutorial, if you can just try downloading the data for homework one of you to just see if you have any issues with, you know, the text file, you were having to copy it in this weird way. I tried doing it in a zip file instead for the homework. So if someone can just give that a try and let me know if I should, it worked? Okay, great, great, perfect. Okay, so for that homework, you're gonna be studying problems with these fully connected feed-forward neural networks. Today, we're gonna talk about these CNNs and we'll look at some code for convolutional neural networks in Thursday's tutorial. So let's talk about these feed-forward neural networks a little bit and kind of what are the features a bit that distinguish them from these CNNs. So the big feature here is that every neuron in whatever layer I'm talking about is connected to every neuron in the next layer. So this gives us a lot of parameters to play around with to try to consider different data sets. But an issue here, or a potential issue, is these types of networks don't kind of make use or exploit certain properties that we might often know about our data, such as the fact that we expect it to have some local features or we expect it to be translationally invariant. We're not at all making use of that information in this type of design, and let me kind of explain why. So we could still perhaps learn in these networks that our data is translationally invariant or that it is more important to consider things locally, but we have to learn it and it's not something that's really imposed in this structure. So let's consider an example. Thank you. So let's take the example of an image that's 4x4 that I'm trying to study. It could be some kind of a picture of something that you have, or it could be a spin configuration on, spin configuration in 2D, because we'll specifically talk about 2D here. So kind of similar to yesterday's tutorial, we kind of want to introduce some convention of how we label things. So maybe we're going to this way. So we have something like this. But in everything that I've been doing so far, if I take something like this as input to a feed-forward neural network, I kind of flatten that into just a 1D vector. Like this, and this is exactly what you're going to do on the homework as well. But an issue you might notice is that, say, for these pixels 3 and 4 here, I do expect those to be spatially close in my original picture. But 4 and 5, assuming I don't have periodic boundary conditions here, 4 and 5 are really not that close. But we see that they're really, you know, we can't at all tell from what I'm going to feed in what neurons here I would maybe want to treat differently because they're close versus not. But we could expect that in a lot of cases, we would maybe want to prioritize looking at relationships between things that are close if that's kind of what I'm expecting physically. You guys have any questions about, haven't really talked at all about CNNs yet, but just kind of motivating why doing something other than what we've been doing so far could be useful if we know that information about our data. So something that we make use of in these CNNs that helps with this issue is something called local receptive fields. That, you know, rather than having these layers where everything is connected to everything, we could process the data in some patches that help us maintain this dimensional structure. So for example, if I have this two-dimensional lattice, it could one of the simplest things I could do is take just a 2x2 patch. And let me see. So this would be kind of like my input. Now I'm going to kind of write it in two dimensions rather than flattening it. And I could think of going somehow to the next layer where to get this one, I'm going to consider connections from everything. So just to kind of explain what's happening here, I start with an image that's 4x4. I apply some weights or some links here. For these patches, I'm going to kind of be more explicit about this notation. But these are actually components of some weight matrix. I'll kind of show you the notation we tend to use to store all of that. In the example I give you here, the patch size was 2x2. And then from doing that, I then get another set of neurons here, and then I can do something else with that. And I'm going to kind of talk about what might come next. But this is, again, kind of one step we could do to try kind of implement this idea of preserving this dimensional structure.
So getting from 4x4 to 3x3, it will involve overlaps, right?
Yeah, so this is something we're going to talk about. You can do it with overlaps, or there's ways to. You could also kind of, well, I'm going to show you in a minute. Yeah, but that's a really good point. We don't, the way I've shown you is kind of assuming that we're going to do every possible 2x2 block here, but you don't have to do it that way. So let me show you what it would look like if you do or don't do that. Oh, sorry. I like skipped. So that was exactly what's coming next. So there's a lot of things we can do to make this more general. So I've shown you just a 2x2 patch here, but you could explore something bigger. You could also look at a different shape if you wanted to. So another thing we can do, just taking note of the fact that if I was doing it this way and I was considering every place I could put this, then the ones that are on the edges would be considered less frequently than the ones in the middle. And maybe you don't want to do that. So what you could do is you could pad the image with some zeros to ensure that maybe every pixel of your image is considered the same amount of times. And one more, which is addressing the point that was just brought up, is that we can introduce something called stride, which means that we maybe don't want to apply these patches everywhere. We'll maybe take a step before we apply the next one. So just a simple example I can show you here. If I kind of look at the same case as before, but the stride is 2, then I'll still have them connected in the same way, but now, of course, I would have a different size at the next layer. So that's what I would get if my stride was 2. Back here, if my stride was 1, maybe let me just draw quickly here. I would then have apply my next one here. There would be some neurons that are considered twice. Again, so you can also do stride 1, and then you would just get back to that other picture. So if I want to kind of combine these to just tell you how those different factors affect my input, and let me just say I'm assuming square patches here.
No, it's just strides in both directions to be same or something.
Sorry?
Strides in the two different directions in principle could be different.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I've also, yeah. I can, yeah, this, I guess you could say this is actually the length in one dimension. If you wanted, you could look at the same formula in the x and y directions. You could also have a different batch size in the two directions. So in physics, we're often going to be considering systems with periodic boundary conditions. This is maybe less common when you're processing images of cats and dogs. But in physics, we often care about periodic boundary conditions. So in that case, rather than padding with zeros, it might be more common to just kind of continue these filters going around the periodic boundaries. In this case, we get a simpler expression here if we have these periodic boundary conditions. And this is what we'll do in the tutorial, but I just kind of wanted to show you more generally different ways that you can consider doing this transformation. Any questions so far, guys? Yeah.
Theoretically speaking, is this really an issue? The fact that we can't sort of, maybe we know some symmetry of our data beforehand, but if we didn't know that, or if we just chose to ignore the symmetry, at the end of the day, it seems like your program would still learn the correct.
Yeah, so you're right that if we, again, like sometimes it comes back to like the practical consideration of, you know, not wanting to get stuck for the time that we have to do something, right? That these fully connected feed-forward neural networks, if I could let them run for as long as I wanted, they could probably eventually find a solution. But these ones are kind of making use of some knowledge that we would often expect to have. And so they will often have fewer parameters than a fully connected network. And it'll just speed up your training, which can be a really big advantage. I mean, in practice, you can often get stuck in some of these networks. And yeah, you know, so it's just, again, it's kind of like a way to improve the way that we do things. But you're right, what you're going to do in the homework, you're actually going to study the Ising model with just a fully connected neural network. You're not going to make use of these convolutions, and you'll be able to show that you're successful. So in that case, we don't actually need this information to be successful at that problem.
And if I just have some general symmetry of my initial data.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a claim like there exists a rewiring of the neural network?
Yeah, I think this is something people definitely explore, is like different types of operations you can do. So of course, I'm just talking about like specifically something that's local, which is pretty common in images and also in physical systems. But yeah, you could definitely try to implement like other types of transformations if you knew that. So definitely, I think there are networks that are maybe more specialized to maybe more exotic types of systems, for sure. Another thing too is that sometimes you want to design systems that can discover some of these features. So it could also be interesting sometimes to look at the more general network and see, can it figure out this locality somehow on its own? But you know, maybe there's times where we're trying to really figure out something else and we think, okay, that's an okay assumption to put in my model from the beginning.
So in this picture, what are the LRFs, or what is
that? By that I mean like these patches that are processing things in these local patches.
So it's not a variable or something. It's just how you want to process things.
Yeah, I guess there's going to be these free parameters still on every connection, right? Going between these. Yeah, those are like the variables that you have there. And I'm still going to introduce a little bit more notation of exactly what you're varying. But really, like the important part of all this is like this locality, the processing in these patches. Yeah.
So I have two questions. One is, do you know if these ever get used for anything other than like image like data? And because they seem specially constructed for this type of use case.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second question is, if for regular feed forward neural network, there are proofs that are like these are universal function approximators, but is there something similar with these convolutional neural networks that
A proof that a CNN is also a Yeah, actually, that's a good question. I don't know if there's a proof. I can try to look into that. If there's a proof for that, I'll look into that. But I don't know the answer to that. What Tyler is alluding to is, which I don't think I said in lecture, is that for the fully connected feed-forward neural network, there is a proof that if you have some function that you're trying to fit, there exists some fully connected feed-forward network with one hidden layer that will be able to approximate that to arbitrary precision. So I don't know if there's a similar proof for CNNs. In practice, I mean, we often use these as kind of the first step of our network, and then we'll do a fully connected layer a bit later on, like this on the next layer as well. So I'm just also trying to think like what that would look like to prove, because you can't, how would you do it with just like in the other proof is for just one layer. Anyway, let me think, see if like what kind of results there are surrounding that. I don't know the answer. And then in terms of whether this is used for other things, it's definitely used for images. So what I've presented here is assuming two dimensions. Of course, you could extend this to three dimensions. It would just be harder to draw. But rather than looking at these two-dimensional patches, I could look at like cubes or something like that in 3D. That's something people definitely do when they have three-dimensional data. But in physics, we often, you know, are trying to process data that we know comes from two dimensions. And so this will often be used. We're going to do that on Thursday. You'll see that if you try to use this fully connected feed-forward neural network to study this gauge theory that we were looking at yesterday, it won't be successful. But with a CNN, it will be successful. So that's a just like one case we're going to see where it is really useful to use in physics. Anything else? OK, so let's talk about the next item here, which is channels. What do I mean by channels? So often, and I'm going to kind of give you examples of what I mean by this, but often our input is actually going to have three different sub-indices, whereas for feed-forward neural networks, I kind of put all of this information together. Here, I'm going to kind of break this up into these two spatial indices. And then a channel index. So again, CNNs are often used for image processing of photographs of some sort. In that case, if your image was in color, this channel would often label these different RGB channels of how you can decompose the colors of your different pixels. But for us, we're going to make use of kind of a different way that we can use channels. So again, we're going to go back. I'll draw on the next board the example again from this gauge theory yesterday. There, if you remember, my spins were not just living on the sites of my lattice, they were on the bond. So I didn't just straightforwardly have this 2D structure. I had some sub-lattices there. So in that case, these channels can be used to label the different sub-lattices. And then, these patches that I apply, if they're square, they would then have an extra dimension. They would then have this extra dimension to indicate how many channels I have. So let's just remember what we did yesterday. So could have done a smaller example. This is a lot of drawing. So there's kind of different things we might want to label on this lattice. First are the lattice sites, but that's not where our spins live. Our spins live on the bonds. So this is kind of how we could label things in this picture. So just to zoom in on so if I'm kind of thinking of my spatial coordinates x, y, associated to that, I'm going to have x, y with channel 1, and then also x, y, and channel 2, if I break it down this way. I'll give you guys a second. Write that down and then see if you have questions. Okay. Any questions about that kind of sublattice decomposition? Okay. So the next thing to talk about is shared weights and biases. So let me write down what I mean by that. So if we go back to where we were talking about these different ways to apply these filters or these patches, you know, in this picture, for example, I have four patches drawn here. The idea would be that I can implement shared weights and biases, meaning that the weights that I have on all those links associated with those patches are going to be the same for all four of those square patches that I've drawn there. So what this does by sharing these weights and biases, it's ensuring that the transformation that I'm applying when I do this convolution, it's ensuring that that's translationally invariant. You could think of it similarly, or it's kind of analogous to in the Ising model. If I'm considering a translationally invariant Ising model, this J coupling is constant everywhere in the theory. So in a similar way, I could think that the weights I kind of want to apply in this system are going to be the same everywhere. And this is going to have a dramatic reduction in the number of parameters that I'm fitting in this model. So in addition to that, we often will not just apply one patch or one filter. We can have several different ones and maybe look for different local features. And the way this looks, I'm again going to have some activation function. And again, I'm kind of breaking down my input indices into these three parts. And let me just label for you everything here. So just as before, I'm still going to have an activation function. I'll move this up. So I've given you this expression in the simple case where you have square patches and stride one. You can imagine generalizing the way you would do it to account for those. In practice, there's going to be libraries that kind of implement this all for you when you write the code. So it's more just to kind of show you the idea of how that works without getting too bogged down in notation. You guys have questions about that? I'm going to kind of break down that weight matrix a little bit for you, but yeah.
Are all the filters always the same size?
Good question. In this case, they are the way I've shown it. I mean, it would just mean that you would have a strange matrix, I guess. So basically, this K is labeling your different filters, the K index on the weight matrix. So it would just mean that the size of the remaining three dimensions of that tensor depend on K. But I think in principle you could do that. That's a good point. I thought about that.
So what are we calling the filter?
Yeah, let me show you. So I think like a lot of it is answered by kind of breaking down these sub-indices on M. So the number of filters is going to be nf, and that's indexed by this k here. So for every k, we have a filter that's that size L patch by L patch by number of channels. And so this is indexing the patch along X, the patch along Y, and your channels.
By filter, we only mean the weight matrix.
I think the language for it would be that for a fixed value of k, I have one filter. The rest of this like three-dimensional tensor that's there for each value of k is a filter. So one point I want to emphasize that kind of already came up . These CNNs tend to have a lot fewer free parameters if I have these shared weights and biases. Of course, that's going to depend on the number of filters that you have. If you have tons and tons of filters, each of them is going to have weights for each element of the patch for all of those filters. So, of course, you could crank up this number of filters really high so that you still have a huge number of free parameters. But usually, we tend to be able to do a good job with far fewer parameters than with feedforward neural networks. So what this means is that I'm often going to be able to explore larger data sets for these convolutional networks than I would be able to for feedforward neural networks. Again, that's assuming that my data I'm trying to learn about is translationally invariant and local, because that's really where those advantages are based on, is that I'm putting those assumptions into my structure. Yeah.
My question is kind of, what do you mean when you say local? Because if we're, and I don't know if you're going to go through this in the tutorial, but Z2 gauge topological phases have kind of like this global structure.
Yeah.
And so how is it that apparently these convolutional neural networks work when the thing that you're trying to learn is a global property?
Yeah, that's a good point. So I guess what I'm meaning there is, you still can have issues with finding those kinds of things because there are some non-local features. If you remember in what's going to happen in that case specifically is that when we put this in, the network is going to learn to look at these plaquettes because you remember the constraint in that theory that if you had to an even number of upspins, then, and if that was true for every single plaquette, then that would also make it topologically ordered. So in the end, it turns out that we have to look at that kind of over the whole lattice. It has to be true everywhere, but it's still kind of something local that it turns out that it can learn there. So I guess, again, local, yeah, I agree. It's a little vague the way that I've said it here, but I think I would kind of refer back to here too, which is that in the Hamiltonian here, the terms that I consider that make up my Hamiltonian involve looking at terms that are close to it, but I agree. Sometimes the feature that we care about in the end is not local, and that's definitely the case for Z2 gauge theory, and that can often lead to complications in this kind of thing. Okay, so let me just talk about something else that's often used in conjunction with these convolutional transformations. So it's another type of transformation we can apply called pooling that is also still going to preserve the spatial structure. And it's a type of coarse graining, so it's especially useful if we have highly correlated data that's maybe redundant in some way. The idea the idea is that if I have a 4x4 set of data, I'm gonna again look at some patches. For each one, let me label all the sites there. And I'm going to do some operation that takes me down to a smaller number. And this operation that I do can be the maximum of all of those. So I'm going to do some kind of an operation that's going to just give me a smaller number of inputs on the next layer, which doesn't involve any free parameters. It's just coarse graining my information. And let me just write a couple of notes, and then I'll take questions. So of course, there's a trade-off here because I'm maybe losing some information about my data, but it can speed things up a lot. So in some situations, it could be a good thing to do. So I also just want to note, we're going to do this separately for each channel. We wouldn't normally do averaging between channels, typically. And then the last thing I want to note, and then I'll see if you guys have questions, is just, so I've kind of talked to you about a convolutional layer and then also some pooling layers. How do we tend to use these? How do we combine everything? Well, of course, you're free to design networks in a lot of different ways, but something you'll often do. Is kind of do a convolution followed by a pooling, potentially do this more than once. And then you'll have a smaller data set, and you might then do some fully connected layers. So that's the way you'll often see that done. And I just wanted to emphasize, too, I have some nice references that that kind of give you some visual illustrations of these convolutional networks, because I find it's really helpful to have these nice designed visuals, because kind of is really relying on this spatial structure. And so in the tutorial on Thursday, I'm going to show you a little bit of those resources that can maybe be useful for understanding this stuff a little bit more. So any questions, guys? Yeah.
In trying to diagnose like overfitting,
yeah,
it seems like it's bad if you would do like dropout on the convolutional part.
Oh, interesting.
Data.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping the data, but just testing how data is being evaluated in the network. So I guess the question is, are there like CNN specific?
That's a great question. I'll look into it. I don't know the answer to that. But yeah, I have to think about whether you have to be more careful. Yeah, let me think about it, and I'll come back to it. Anna?
Just the term feature maps.
Mm-hmm.
Shows up a lot in this context.
Yeah, that's true. Let me remember, what is exactly, I think often, let me make sure I'm speaking right. I always have to be careful because sometimes people, I don't know if people are always careful, but I think what people mean by that is filters, like different filters, because each filter is kind of trying to identify different features. I think that's what people often mean. I'll double check to make sure I'm saying the right thing there. But yeah, I believe what they mean is like each filter is often thought of as looking for a different feature. Yeah.
I just have a comment.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Sometimes it's like the output of the different features or the filters that then will go into the feed-forward neural network at the end. And so it's kind of like, I think it's called a map because like the filters are learning these features. And so they get mapped to this vector that then becomes the input for the feed-forward.
The that's kind of map, okay, like
yeah, extracted feature.
Like the whole thing is kind of mapping. Yeah, I guess the idea is that you're taking your input, you're applying these filters that look for features, and then ideally after you've done that on the convolution, the output that you have going into the fully connected layer is representing features in a more concise. So I guess you're saying like the whole thing is kind of the
That's how
I've
interpreted it.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. So again, next lecture, we're going to kind of switch gears to talk about something else, but we're going to revisit DNNs in the tutorial on Thursday.